The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
This is Dana Mitchell from Ghosts of Shepherdstown. When visiting Shepherdstown, be sure to look up my Shepherdstown Mysteries Walk, where a story can be told, but a mystery must be experienced. I've got Dave and Mike on my VIP list, so you can join too.
Good evening, Para-X. It is 6:01, actually, on Monday evening, which means we're a little late. Well, I mean, I guess with all the commercials and beginning stuff. Anyway, you're listening to The Odyssey Files. I'm your host, Michael O'Neill. As always, is my co-host, David Sawyer. How are you doing tonight, Dave?
Wonderful. After a great 4-day weekend, although my time wasn't obviously as great as your time in the last week, but it was good, though. It was, nonetheless, it was good on my end. It could have been better. I could have been sitting out drinking margaritas in 82-degree sun and playing golf and, you know.
You could have.
I could have.
But I was.
Right, exactly. You were.
So
fighting through the storms that we had here.
Yeah. So congratulations, everybody. You are now listening to a Odyssey host with a tan.
Ooh, yeah. You got me on that one.
No more two pasty white guys trying to put on a paranormal show.
No.
Now it's one pasty white guy, one tan guy trying to put on a paranormal show.
Yes.
So, yeah. So, last week, for anybody that was listening, and as far as I know, a lot of you were, which is good. We finished up our 3-week, show or 3-week part, three part, 3 weeks of UFOs. But tonight we are actually going to, kind of stick with that type of topic. 'Cause it has nothing to do with UFOs really.
No.
But space in general.
Yes.
As any longtime listeners would know. And I don't know if there are any of you out there besides maybe Kat.
Hi, Kat.
But, I don't even know if she's there. Nope. She's obviously sleeping or, I don't know, getting killed by her cats or something. But, we did Fringe Paranormal. Probably week 4, something like that of our show.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yep. Yeah, and this is going to be a... Oh, there's Kat. just in time to miss my joke about her getting eaten by her cats.
Yeah.
So, oh well, there went that. So, but this is going to be kind of a recurring theme of, you know, every so often we're going to do like the outskirts of the paranormal, these fringe paranormals. And so tonight we're going to try and hit up the topics of like black holes, portals, teleportation, and parallel universes.
Right.
So we're going to put it in
layman terms, because Mike and I have crunched all of the technical data for you. So it's not painful for you to read all about quantum physics. And what we're going to do is take and spin all of that into the Mike and Dave common man terminology so that you can get just as much out of it as we did on the research.
I got nothing out of the research. I couldn't understand a single word that I read.
You increased your vocabulary on your 6-syllable words, though.
Oh, did I ever. I think I started to drool halfway through. It was just, oh, I could not. Who writes these things? Ugh. It was awful. Awful. Trying to get information to bring to you people about these things. So, do you want to start, Dave, or do you want me to?
Well, I don't care. Either way. Want to flip a coin or?
No. Do you have a coin?
No.
I don't have a coin. So.
All right.
I'll go.
All right. You start.
I will start off with black holes. Oh. Which, like, seriously. Before I started doing the research and the reading for this show, I mean, obviously I knew black holes as a gravimetric distortion that, you know, nothing can escape, not even light. That's why it's black. It's just a big pile of emptiness. And that was pretty much it. And that they obviously existed. So a black hole, I didn't even know light was, like, considered electromagnetic radiation.
Yeah.
Like, no idea. Light is light. So why take the word light and turn it into electromagnetic radiation? Had no idea. So these regions of space-time. Now that in itself, I do not understand. So a black hole is actually a region of space-time exhibiting strong gravitational effects that nothing, not even particles and electromagnetic radiation such as light, can escape from inside it. The theory of general relativity predicts that a sufficiently compact mass can deform space-time to form a black hole. Well, I guess that was the other thing that I knew. I knew stars. Stars collapse and they can create these black holes.
Yes.
That was it. So now I understand that there are supermassive black holes. We're very, very good at naming things.
Well, yeah. Supermassive is it's a technical term from, it's like, woo!
I would almost prefer that. Just woo, black holes.
Woo, it's a woo black hole.
That means of millions of solar masses. I don't even know what a solar mass is.
That's big.
Like, I consider myself to be a pretty smart guy. But wow, am I dumb when it comes to this stuff. Like, I'm just reading their, like, the general explanation of their findings. I can't even grasp, like, the calculations it took to come up with that result. Like, I really, really love Neil deGrasse Tyson. I think that guy is awesome. But my, like, respect for the man, after reading this stuff. I was going to swear, so my apologies. I turned it over.
It's a hybrid.
Yes. The schnuff.
It's a snuff. New word. Thank you. You're welcome, America.
Shuff. Created it's a shuff. That's what it is. It's shuff. That's our new word.
Yeah.
So, super massive black holes, which I guess are black holes merging with each other. Didn't know that could happen.
It's like black hole date night.
Yeah, pretty much. It is black hole orgies. Why didn't they use that name?
That's not what I said. I said
no. That's not what you said. That's what I said. I turned it into that.
You did.
So blame me.
Yes, you did. You turned that completely in a different direction than I was going.
So again, send hate mail, care of the Paracave Radio Network. Attention, Matt Jesso.
Yeah.
For that joke.
Yep.
So super massive black holes, exist. It is a big pile of nothing. So, I don't even want to get into it. I really, really don't. Because I don't understand any of it.
Well, you got to understand, it can't be nothing. Because if it was nothing, it wouldn't exist.
Well, I mean, that's what they're saying. That it is a big pile of nothing. That the only the only way that they can actually see a black hole, like from telescopes or anything, is the fact that there's just, it's like the bending of stuff around it.
Yep.
And just the absolute lack of any sort of light.
Right.
That is the only way that they can see it.
Right.
And so they actually found, and I cannot grasp like the size of what they're trying to tell me, but they actually found a black hole in a galaxy that is actually sparsely populated, which I'm obviously has nothing to do with people, but like other galaxies and stuff like that. Weighing 17 billion suns. I don't understand. Like, I'm assuming they mean weighing, and you can correct me if I'm wrong.
Is it weight? You mean like weight?
Yeah, like mass.
Means, yeah, so mass size, it's 17 billion suns.
Yes. Up until now, the biggest supermassive black hole.
Who measured that out of the... I'm curious as to who counted out 17 billion sun masses and decided that that was the number.
I agree. And they're taking it from a photo.
Yeah.
So the observations made by NASA's Hubble telescope and the Gemini telescope in Hawaii noticed this massive black hole. But so far, up until now, the biggest supermassive black holes in general are roughly 10 billion times the mass of our sun. I don't know what that would be. They find them at the cores of large galaxies in regions of the universe that are packed with other large galaxies. So it'd be like taking a 1-quart Ziploc bag and like throwing in a whole bunch of other Ziploc bags and being like, okay, that's what we're talking about here. Am I right in layman's terms? Boron terms, however you want to call it.
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, I'm just wondering if those supermassive black holes and all these, like, distant galaxies aren't, like, you know, the after effects of the Death Star destroying a planet.
Yeah, I don't know.
Something like that, right? I mean, you know, they don't just... I mean, if they just arbitrarily form, okay... Why don't they just arbitrarily form in our solar system?
Well, technically, we actually do have a black hole in our solar system.
Do we?
I'm sorry, not in our solar system, in our galaxy.
In our galaxy. In
the Milky Way galaxy, we do have, in fact, I think I read that is actually a supermassive black hole galaxy.
There you go. So right there... That, to me, is the potential possibility of using a black hole as a gateway so that UFOs, from wherever they're coming from, are able to come into our galaxy via the black hole.
How would they do that, though? Because supposedly nothing is supposed to be able to escape a black hole. Not even light. If light cannot escape a black hole, how does... A saucer escape the black hole.
Well, and you got to remember something. Everything that we did when we did our research is based on human interpretation and the limitations that we are under based on what we know. Alien technology, if it exists, and we're assuming it does because we presented a couple of really good cases that... that are not explainable as to things people saw and to abductions and things like that. So if the alien races exist, which we presented some ideas that they do, they're obviously far superior to us. They have the ability to cloak. They have the ability to travel at hyper speeds. They have the ability to grab a human being and transport them in the air, you know, to their craft. I don't know. I mean, we can't put our limitations our mankind brain limitations onto an alien race.
True, but science is science.
Well, it's science is limited by the being, right, exactly, which is nothing compared to what alien technology would be.
Okay, because while I was reading this, I actually came up with a question I wanted to ask you to see what you thought of it.
Yep.
Do you think that, especially based on what you had just said,
yep,
do you think that black holes, since they cut through space-time, space and time, I don't know, but do you think that they are all connected to each other?
Well, that's a good question. So I'm going to answer it like this. I think that the combination, and this is going to kind of segue into your next thing, I think, the combination of black holes and wormholes, I think, are in a way related. I think that they're kind of a 1-2 punch. And I think that there's a very distinct possibility that a super intelligent, super advanced alien race / life form would have mastered a way to use those for teleportation and for jumping, time jumping, I guess is like the way to say it. And I backed that up by a statement that I read about black holes, but by a professor that was the guy who was working on something who actually said that the theory that black holes cannot be traveled through is inaccurate, and that there is a possibility that you could survive going through a black hole and that you would not be harmed. And it was a very interesting paper I was reading. And that guy said that within the next 1,000 years, that he believes that mankind will have a grasp on that technology. Not that we'll be necessarily utilizing it, but that we'll have a grasp on the technology. A better understanding is kind of what I took from it. So a better understanding / grasp on the technology to where we could implement that for potential future travel.
To where?
Well, that's just it. And that was the interesting part of his paper, is that he was talking about we could end up right back here. And then he went on to explain it like really technical terms, which I understood 2/3 of it, and then 1/3 of it just blew me away. You know, but he said, you know, it could be like a rubber band, like a rebound effect. Like, so we go into the black hole almost instantaneously, we're right back where we started from, because we don't know how to travel how to set a path through them to jump to different areas. He said, or we could end up in a different galaxy with different life forms, and that would be us, basically us being the alien going to these different galaxies that have life forms, and we just kind of show up in our spacecraft, which is totally freaking them out. And then we go, you know, and invade their airspace, you know, trying to understand what the hell we're looking at and who they are. And, you know, and it was really interesting. It was good. And the guy's an accredited. He's a PhD, and he's out of the UK. I don't remember. It was England or Cambridge or something. Very world-renowned guy, wrote a ton of papers, and he's some kind of physicist. I can't remember the name, but it's got about 96 characters, of which only 3 are vowels. So I wasn't even going to try to pronounce it.
Okay, so here's my mind-blowing question.
All right.
So it's going to take us, according to this paper, at least 1,000 years.
Yeah,
to just understand.
Right. That's what you said. Yes.
What we may or may not be able to do when it comes to a black hole.
Correct.
Now, let's say we finally, maybe it takes us 2,000 years.
Yep.
And we get this craft or whatnot that can survive a black hole. And we go through it, we survive. And let's say, because in my understanding that they say space-time because they say time is just as fluid as space.
Correct.
So, could all of these UFOs that we are seeing be us from the future coming back?
Well, now that would be interesting. I guess I had never thought of that. Well, we're going to look a heck of a lot different, I guess, because yep. I've never heard of any UFO case where they looked like a human, like we look like. I mean, I've never once did I read any case ever reported of a UFO where somebody was abducted or a sighting or something where they were 6'5", you know, and looked like Dave walking up to them going, Hey, how's it going? Come on to the ship here. We're going to probe you for about 4 hours, and then we're going to drop you right back in your vehicle.
True. But I don't think that there are really any type of abduction cases or UFO cases or whatnot where the word humanoid hasn't been said. Everybody's had two legs, two hands, or, you know, two arms, a head.
Right.
So, I mean, who's to say that after, you know, 1,000 years, you know, when we've turned this rock that we live on into a huge radiation bubble,
yep,
that's not what becomes of us, that we don't start shrinking and that we don't start forming differently. Well, I'm coming up with this as I go. So
yeah, I mean that's, you know, that's interesting. I mean it's an interesting thought, but I'm gonna say that, and like it's the same thing I said when we talked about how I believe, you know, that God created everything, and that means that He created other races too in different areas, and that maybe we weren't supposed to meet. But I'm going to say that there are other intelligent human life forms, humanoid life forms, that are alive and well right this second, but just not near enough to our technology to where we could go visit them. I think it would be extremely arrogant for anybody on the planet Earth to say that out of all of the galaxies and the hundreds of billions of stars and the hundreds of millions of galaxies, that our planet has not been replicated in some way, shape, or form. And there's another great paper I read by a guy who basically had the theory that you take and shuffle a deck of cards and you deal the cards out, okay? And let's say you deal however many hands, and it didn't give me the exact number, but let's say, as you're dealing, eventually when you're done dealing, you're going to reach the saturation point of how many potential hands and cards you can deal, whether it be number and suit combinations or whatever. Eventually, there's a finite end to that. There's a number that it's going to be, okay,
yeah,
out of the 52 cards. So his concept was, and what he was teaching, and he's a physicist too, what he was teaching was, If that's the case, and we as men, or mankind, I don't mean to sound like it's just men, as mankind, if we live under those guidelines and that structure of these are the limitations we place upon ourselves, then the fact that we exist, just the pure fact that we exist here, has to have been replicated hundreds of thousands of times.
Because I would hope so.
There's too many planets and too many galaxies and too many stars, substantially outweigh the number of potential combinations in a deck of cards. I mean, it's astronomical, the number of other planets and galaxies and stuff compared to how many hands you can make out of a deck of cards. So his theory, and that's what he based it on. And his theory, I mean, and that's kind of putting it in layman's terms, obviously. There was a whole lot more in there that had, you know, 8-syllable words. But you know, that thought pattern I found very interesting, because if that is a finite number, and then and let's say that every planet that's formed has to be a hand, boop, 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 whatever, And so you deal out 100 million, and at 100 million and one, boom, there's another Earth. And then boom, 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 and at 100 million and one, there's another Earth. Well, if we're talking hundreds of billions of stars, then how has that not replicated and played itself out, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands and tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of times or millions of times? I mean, I don't know. The numbers are so big, I can't even fathom them. I don't even know what 19 billion suns is, you know? I mean, I don't even fathom where they come up with numbers like that. That's just ridiculous, you know?
Well, that's what they get paid big bucks to figure out. Yeah.
It's just say, it's bigger than a Volvo, and we all understand what that means. That means it's really...
It's bigger than a Volvo, yeah.
Yeah, yep. No, it's big.
There are more suns than people in Los Angeles. Let's just put it that way.
Yes. And the great potential that there is intelligent life spread all throughout the galaxy.
Just depends on what part of their evolution that they're in.
Right.
So.
Well, they might just be a whole planet of amoebas, you know, or simple plant life. Right. And then they might be a superior race who has a gigantic mothership that can make the speed of light jump to our galaxy and then sit beyond what we can see or hide itself behind a planet and then disperse smaller craft from this large mother craft, kind of like taking a aircraft carrier to war and being able to disperse multiple planes and helicopters off of that mother craft, and then have all of these smaller craft dispersing off of it. Or hence Independence Day, where you had the gigantic mother craft and then come into our area and then dispersed all of the smaller craft.
So I think that at some point in time, we should have a show that combines the theories that we're talking about here with what we see on Star Trek. And how they correlate to our future in actual, like, reality that we could at some point move into.
I think that's got great potential. We already have established space travel. There's an orbiting space station that three or four different countries participate in. We send spacecraft into outer space and successfully dock with that space station that's orbiting. I can't imagine that's a very simple feat to do, you know.
And there's actually college courses now that people can take that deal with the theories of Star Trek, like phasers and warp drive and stuff like that.
And cloaking.
Cloaking.
I mean, you know, the Klingons perfected cloaking, so.
Actually, I think it was more Romulans than...
Or was it Romulans that did cloaking first and then the Klingons stole it from them?
Well, I don't know who did it first, but I just know that there was always something that you could, you know, the distortion or...
Right.
Or something that would allow you to at some point track them. But the scimitar in Nemesis was perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And there's a theory... Well, there's
Go ahead, Dave.
As I say, there's a theory out there that with that concept of cloaking, hence, creating like an invisibility, that it all works off of frequencies. And that if you can adjust frequencies properly and get the frequencies going in a very specific pattern, that you and I could be invisible to each other. Now, that's a mind-blowing
thought. Awesome. So another thing that is really, really good that we'll have to discuss right after the break is teleportation.
Absolutely.
See what I did there, Dave?
I did. Segwayed right in.
All right. So, yeah, we spent a half hour at black holes. We weren't supposed to. So
that's okay.
That's the world we live in now. So we're going to take a break really quick, and then we will be back with... teleportation, and we'll see what else we have time for. Considering we have four topics, 15 minutes each, and we just spend a half hour on one. So,
yeah.
Go us. All right, we'll be right back.
order for the light to shine so brightly, the darkness must be present. Tune in every Monday at 10 o'clock for Dark Sun Rising on the Para-X Radio Network.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal. Para-X.
Hi, this is Master Tarot Card Reader Ken Bogle, and I highly encourage you to tune in every Monday night to the Para-X Radio Network for the Para-Cave, hosted by Matt Gesso, as he goes in search of the truth in the supernatural, metaphysical, mystic, and paranormal. Monday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern, only on the Para-X Radio Network. I never miss it, and neither should you.
Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
And we're back. I think every week I'm going to work on that, like, high E.
Yeah.
Just like, hey, we're back.
Yeah, that's lovely. Yeah.
One of these days, it will sound like smooth jazz. That's all I'm saying.
Well. Thank God I got many years left of my life to wait for that to actually come to fruition.
Every week, Dave, you get to hear it.
I'm so excited I'm welling up inside. You don't even know.
If it's anything compared to the my excitement, then I understand fully. So before we went out on the break, we were talking about teleportation. Well, we were talking about Star Trek and black holes, but then we moved it right at the break to teleportation. And for that, I'm going to turn it over to Dave.
All right. So teleportation. We'll get through the technical jargon first, and then, or technical aspect of it, and then we will move on into more comfortable conversation about it. So the idea of teleportation is that you can take anything that you want, an object, a person, whatever, any object, and basically have them be in one specific location, take them and break them down to a subatomic mass particle type of size, transport them to another location, irregardless of distance, reassemble them properly, and have them show up at that spot. So Mike and I were talking about this, and I'll give you a perfect example. So lately we've been driving down to Dubuque a lot. And we looked at each other on our last drive that we went down together anyway. And we both kind of looked at each other about the same time and said, you know, wouldn't it be really cool if we could just like get home from work on Friday and like get together at somebody's house and then teleport down to Dubuque. So instead of a 5-hour car ride, we could just be there in like a second and a half. And we could just be like, hey, Mike and Dave just rolled up in Dubuque. Took us about a second and a half. Sorry for the delay. You know, we got stuck in some cosmic traffic as we were teleporting down. That's what teleportation would be. That's what it would give you the ability to do. I don't know if it'd be a second and a half. Maybe it'd be 2 seconds. Maybe an instantaneous. I don't know. But that's what it would do. So the concept of teleportation, that's the concept. Teleportation in our world today exists. You can go do all the research you want online. You can go to Google and Google in teleportation, and you will see that there are numerous places and universities and physics labs where they have taken nothing large, obviously, but things like subatomic particles and teleported them from one spot to another spot instantaneously. So when I read that, this is kind of the spin I put on it, okay? So I think that we are limited substantially by our minds. All right? So I'm going to set that out there as a precursor. So we as human beings, we're raised within a system that tells us that this is what we can do, but we're never going to be able to achieve this for whatever that reason is. And that starts from basically birth as a child all the way through your teenage years and your influential years and into your 20s and stuff like that. And people say, well, I'm going to do this someday. And 90% of people that are in within your human pool will tell you, yeah, no, that's never going to happen. Those constraints that are put on us limit what we can and cannot do. And I know that's kind of going out into like a weird area, but I believe that. I believe that if we could drop all of our limitations that have been placed upon us somehow, that we could do amazing things with our minds and our bodies. So who's to say that if they could take a subatomic particle, now getting back to what I was talking about, so who's to say if they could take a subatomic particle and move it instantaneously 27 centimeters or whatever it was, it wasn't very large amount of space, but so if you could do that, if you could take that particle and instantaneously teleport it to a different location, why couldn't you take that exact same particle and teleport it to Australia from England? Or why couldn't you take a wooden block and break it down and teleport it from Minnesota to California? And I'm getting some kind of simplistic there, because I don't think the technology right now exists to do it with a human being. We're way too complex for that. But I'm just thinking of things that are inanimate objects. They're not alive. So you don't have to worry about coding all of the genes that and the science that it would take to do that and the mathematical processes it would take to do that. But if you take an inanimate object like a rock or a piece of wood or a piece of glass or something like that, why can't you take that and break it down into subatomic particles and send it, if we already can take subatomic particles and teleport them?
Well, I think the main not deterrent, but the main hindrance to that, one, you would need the same machine at both areas, at both
right.
places.
Right, understandably, yeah.
And they would obviously have to have a 100% steady
connection. Yes.
And
hardwired. You'd have to be hardwired somehow, yes.
Well, exactly. And but I think right now the main problem is, besides the fact that, you know, they don't have anything that complex yet.
Right.
But the money that would take in order to do that would be astronomical. Right at this point in time. Obviously, as we go forward, maybe in another 100 years, and the technology that we need to do that today becomes, you know, no more than a desktop computer. But, you know, I think that they can do it. I think they have to get more complex. But, you know, there's more to just... Hold on, I'm going to sneeze here, maybe.
Uh-oh.
Oh, there it is. Thank you.
Bless you.
Ah, that was my first sneeze on air. Go me. So, I believe that... the technology to move one particle.
Right.
You know, 27 inches exists. But how long did it take us to get to one particle? And I know it probably is a lot easy. It is really easy for us to be like, well, if you can do one, why can't you do, you know, 100,000 in, you know, a glass bottle.
Right.
Yeah. Or whatnot.
Right.
I don't think that we are there yet because of, as you said, the complexity of it, and the money. Because did it all say how much it costs them to build the machine to move one particle for 26 inches?
I mean, but it was a college that did it, so it can't be like they didn't have like an astronomical like federal government budget. I mean, it was a college, so I can't imagine it was like billions of dollars. I mean, you know, they don't have that kind of funding. So, I mean, maybe, you know, maybe a couple million. I mean, but I can't imagine it was like astronomical.
Yeah.
And there's been four or five different places have done it now. It's not just one place and it's like, ooh, yeah, we did it. Other places have replicated that technology and been able to do the exact same thing. And they're all online. You can go read about them everywhere. But
here's my other point. There is a huge difference in moving one particle from one part to the other. From that to moving, let's say, five particles from one place to the other and getting them exactly in the same place.
Right.
Because, I mean, it's not just five particles from here to here. You have to get, you know, and if you move it to 100,000 particles, and I'm sure there's more than 100,000 particles in a glass bottle, but just for the sake of argument, let's say there's 100,000 atoms or particles in a glass bottle. You would have to get it on the other side the exact same way in order for that bottle to come back the exact same as when it left.
Correct.
And I don't know if we are anywhere near that good yet.
So I'll say two things to that. Number one, it's going to be a mathematical equation, obviously.
Definitely.
That's going to allow that. And that's a fact. Number two, if I'm air quoting the ifs here, because we're staying on the same kind of concept of our UFO trilogy. If we have, and we touched on this, if we have alien technology, if alien technology was given to us in exchange for the harvesting of individuals for study, and we talked about it, if that happened, okay, and we have reverse engineered alien technology, then who's to say we don't already have that ability? Because if they're using it, and they have to get here somehow, okay, so once again, maybe if they're not, you know, I'm gonna just step back here for just a second to kind of, I got to fill in one little blank so people don't get lost in what I'm talking about. So,
already there, Dave.
I know, I'm getting, hold on. So, the whole concept of people not believing that UFOs exist is that it's not that the aliens aren't alive somewhere else. That was not the argument on anything I read. It was the amount of time that it would take them to travel to our planet, okay? So, once again, being hindered by our human minds, you can't travel faster than the speed of light. All right, that is the fastest that we can travel that's the fastest that we know that we can travel is the speed of light, okay? So, when we say it takes so many light years to get somewhere, those are real light years. Now, the speed of light is whatever it is. I don't know it off the top of my head. I've been out of school for a long time. But keeping in that same thought process, that's kind of the same guy that I read about that touched on what if alien technology is better than the speed of light, okay? And so it still takes them some time, though, to get to us. And so they make a concerted effort to bring a mothership type of concept to us and then kind of tuck it behind something and then send out these smaller craft so that if we're looking for it, and they kind of know we're looking for it because they know we have technology, but we can't see it because it's in a perfect orbital kind of space behind the moon or behind Mars or Venus or whatever. And so as we move and we're looking out into the stars, they're constantly staying behind the planet every time. But these smaller craft are able to kind of move around, okay? If that happens, and that's a big if, and I understand that. We're not saying that it's happening. We're saying it's if. So if that happens, who's to say that they can't teleport from a location closer to us than maybe their home planet and teleport to our planet within a matter of seconds, let's say. from a closer location. And that if they have that ability, and you know, we always make a movie reference, so we're going to, again, so The Fly with Jeff Goldblum, good movie. He figured out how to take a telepod, and even though it was only a distance of whatever it was, 10 feet or whatever the two pods were apart from each other, he figured out eventually how to take that monkey, that baboon, and teleport it successfully. And it was a math problem, and it goes right to what you were talking about, was that, you know, here we have a glass bottle, but how do we take each tiny subatomic particle and then reassemble it back into the glass bottle? And that, if you remember the movie, if you've seen the movie, that's what he was having. That was the problem, is that it was sending the monkey, but it wasn't sending the monkey the way the monkey was. It was sending the monkey in a kind of a gut pile. So it was all there, but it wasn't all there like it should have been there. And then it was a math problem that he kind of was like, oh my God, you know, and he hit this epiphany and he figured it out. And yes, it's a movie, but but going on with alien technology in the thought process that I'm in, so who's to say that that technology, you know, that was shown through a movie couldn't exist already, and that we're just not smart enough to understand how to do it?
Well, in order for, again, in order for aliens, and I'm not discounting your theory, it could very well be possible, but like nobody ever talks about how like they were, well, I guess that's not entirely true. I was going to say, you know, nobody really says that, you know, the aliens didn't just show up in their room, but yes, they kind of do, but they were asleep. So who knows?
Right.
But, you know, and I know you used the, we even mentioned it last week when you were talking about, that family where the son just disappeared
right.
when standing right next to the mother.
Right.
But they would either have to be able to latch on to us, you know, whether it be our energy, whether it be our particles, in a very specific way in order to read everything that makes us instantly, and then bring that up to their ship, or they would have to have already another machine here that would communicate with that one in order to put them here if they're going long distances.
Well, and that goes all the way back. And how good a theory is that right there, that you were the one who said that the moon was an alien space station?
I was thinking about that when you were talking about it.
All right. You know, right? I mean, when you put everything together, and I know these are fragmented ideas that we have, okay? But if you really sit back and take a look at the things that we've been talking about lately, they all kind of have a way of fitting together. Not in a perfect puzzle, but they have the possibility of fitting together in some sort of intelligent fashion, is what I'm going to say.
Yeah. I think out of everything that we are talking about tonight, and we've only hit two.
Well, we're trying for four, but I don't think we're going to get there.
What I'm going to do here in a second is I'm just going to like read like four sentences about portals.
Yeah.
And that's going to be it.
There you go.
And then Dave can move on. Dave can say his four sentences about parallel universes, and we'll just encompass everything in that paragraph.
Right. There you go.
Crap. Now I missed what I was going to say. I lost it. I lost the thought. It was a really good thought, too. What were you talking about, Dave?
Well, I was going to say we should segment back to your favorite type of concept, which is Star Trek. Because
Star Trek.
Yeah, I know you do. So in the theory of Star Trek, right, they have the ability to teleport or transport from ship to ship or ship to planet or whatever. And they have that ability to put you in a fairly specific location if they transported you to the ground. And I love the fact, and if you even go back to what the theory you had not long ago was, what if alien technology's here, and what if this stuff is already here, and what if our leaders of our society are using movies to soften us up for the eventual disclosure that this stuff really has been going on and that Roswell was real? And that Area 51 wasn't just a test base for, weird aircraft. That it really was a crash site. And that all of these abductions, like in Nome, Alaska, and everything else, have been happening. And cattle mutilations really are, allowed, because they're taking organs from cattle, because cattle are very similar to humans, as pigs are too, as we've already talked about that. I can't go backwards. I forget what I was talking about. So if
that's all right. It's all right. We can, once I started talking about how we were just going to do four sentences of whatever, I lost my thought.
Yeah, you lost your thought.
It's not that. I thought it was pretty good at the time, but since I forgot it so easily, probably not.
It'll come
okay,
back.
Okay, portals. Here's what a portal is. And I can't even believe they explained it like an extraordinary opening in space or time that connects travelers to distant realms. Then they went on to talk about how they've actually found a portal between Earth and the sun, Earth and our sun.
Yep.
And that really doesn't seem to be like a distant realm. And what would I do there? And how fast would I get there? So I guess I don't know.
Was a good thing I read on portals, though, that said that that portals actually exist and they have found them. And that a lot of times the smaller ones, it's a very time constraint kind of thing for when they're open, when they're closed. But that there is a very large one that is constantly open in our universe that is just past the sun, and they don't know where it goes. And it has something to do with the magnetic energy from the sun and solar energy, and then our universe. I kind of understood what they were saying, but for me to explain it to where you would understand or somebody would understand, I probably would chop it up and you wouldn't understand.
It's gonna sound like the teacher on Charlie Brown.
Right. But supposedly there is there is, from everything that I read, a large portal that is constantly open. And it's kind of hidden behind the sun. And it goes to some other universe.
Is it some other universe, like as in parallel universe, or does it go to another galaxy and they're just calling it a universe?
I can't answer that for you. They didn't invite me into that meeting.
Does it go to the Delta Quadrant?
I don't know. Sorry.
Sorry. Just another Star Trek reference.
I know. I got it, but I don't know.
So in 2014, they actually had like a mission that they were going to launch to actually study this portal that they found between Earth and the sun.
Yep.
But there's no mention, one, that they did it, or two, what their findings were. But they thought that because these portals come and go, they open, they close, nobody can, and they're invisible, really, so you can't see them.
Right.
And they figured there was no way to actually find them. And this guy from the University of Iowa, and I almost thought about delaying this topic because I was going to see if maybe I could find him and bring him on the show. He found what he calls like signposts.
Yep.
Here be a portal.
Yep.
Magnetic portals are invisible, unstable, and elusive. Bastards. And they say that maybe I'm reading that wrong. So the space probe from that orbited Earth more than 10 years ago. They actually, the NASA's polar spacecraft that they had revolving around the Earth about 10 years ago, they looked at the data from that as opposed to what they're finding now. And actually found like this cross, these, I don't want to say cross streams, but these X's that they were finding that we're opening up this portal toward the sun. But I don't know what we would use that for.
Well, I mean, is that maybe like the same concept as ley lines on the planet Earth?
More you know, likely.
So two ley lines kind of intersect and it creates a type of, I don't know. I mean, if you look at the concept of ley lines, you know, they say where ley lines cross, there's a very legitimate heightened ability for paranormal activity. You know, why is that? Well, because it puts out a different frequency. That specific location might temporarily or in a percentage type of fashion lessen the thickness of the veil between parallel universes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, so...
Nice segue. Nice dissolve.
We're good at that, aren't we? We're good at segging into that. I mean, if anybody out there needs to be needs to pay somebody to teach them how to segue into the next thing smoothly, you can get a hold of us. Mike will tell you at the end of the show how to get a hold of us. We're good at that, and we do accept currency
donations.
Yeah, yep, we do
donations. Accept,
yes, absolutely.
So, speaking of parallel universes, we have all of 4 minutes. So you have 3 minutes to talk about the simple topic of parallel universes.
Easy. I'll probably be done in 2 minutes. So, all right. Parallel universes. I like the way that the one article I read summed it up. There are four potential parallel universes. So number one, there's a potential parallel universe that if we could, so you got to put this out there first. First of all, nobody believes that they exist. And nobody believes they exist, and nobody believes that we can get to them. Okay, so this is all hypothetical, unlike everything else we were just talking about, which was legitimate, rock solid, concrete scientific evidence.
Yes.
Yeah. So, in the first parallel universe, you would be able to travel to a specific location within a different type of galaxy. So let's say that you wanted to go to some distant satellite or planet or whatever, you would be able to go there because in the first layer of parallel universes, that would be the closest layer. So now they didn't say you'd survive, they didn't say you'd come back, but they said you could hypothetically go there, okay? All right, so that's first one. Number two, the second universe is that you would actually be able to go to a parallel universe and visit a different life form, all right? So in the first one, you're going to a place. In the second one, you're going to a life form, or you're going to go visit a life form. So I'm simplifying the hell out of this. I just want to say that. In the third one, you would go to kind of what would be you, and this goes right back to what you were talking about with what if the alien race is us in the future 1,000 years or 10,000 years, and we're coming back to teach ourselves. So in the third parallel universe, if you could visit it, you would go visit you, but you wouldn't be you, but you would be you. Okay, so I know you got to wrap your head around that one, but it would be a future you. Okay. So you might be the little guy with the big head, that's 4 foot tall. Who knows? I don't know. But that was it. Then the fourth universe would be, the fourth universe would be utopia. And that basically heaven, I guess, if you want to look at it that way. And that's kind of the way I read it, would be so that everything that you always dreamed to be a perfect place for you, that's what the fourth universe would be if you could get there to go visit it. And I kind of like
just yes or no. one final question before we say goodnight. Do you believe the Star Trek theory that says for every decision we make, for every action that we do, the outcome of that actually exists in its own singular universe?
I'm going to say yes.
Okay. All right. Well, on that note, that's going to do it for tonight. Supposedly, Mr. Matt Gesso in the Paracave Radio will be up here next with special guest Elizabeth Saint, our biggest fan. So, So, everybody, have yourselves a good night. We will see you next week with another phenomenal show where we will blow your minds with our ability to explain everything.
And segue.
And segue, yes. So, everybody, have yourselves a good night. We will see you next week.